fellow Freedom fans. We're back, David Allen Carmichael, and with Jeff Dickstein, and he is a lawyer for Mr. Benson. And he's going to tell us here in a minute what they plan on doing. They've had a case that they've taken. It's a defense where the government filed an injunction to have Mr. Benson not sell his information package with regard to his opinion that the 16th Amendment actually has not been lawfully ratified. And so that was his opinion. He was communicating it and selling a package. And so that's what's going on. And so it went up to the appeals court, and the appeals court honored the injunction and made it so that Mr. Benson could not sell this particular package. And so it has stuff to do with some free speech and commercial speech and things like that.
The other thing they did, David, was they ordered Benson to turn over to the government the names of everybody that had purchased the package so they could be investigated by the IRS.
Now, when I read that, I realized, wait a minute, there's a problem there. I would think if somebody took action on that package, the IRS would know it. I mean, you know, it seems like that was very clear in the case that they knew what those behaviors would look like and would, I guess, could find out from them whether they got it from Mr. Benson. But the court recognized, as I was reading, that some people just read it for reading its sake. I mean, you know, I'm not going to pay that much money to do research before I interview the guy, but it's possible I could be somebody who would, you know, get the package just for my own entertainment sake, you know, either to be a heckler or, you know, or a talk radio guy. So I thought that was a little bit weird. Now, what are you going to do? What's your plans with regard to this case in the U.S. Supreme Court? Have you already written a brief? Have you filed a brief? What arguments are you going to make?
The brief has been drafted, and it's available on my website, jeffdickstein.com, jeffdickstein.com. And if you click on the front page, or the first page, you will see draft petition for writ of cert. It's the second thing you can click on the web page. And by the way, all the pleadings in the district court are there. Everything filed in the Court of Appeals is there. And now I've got the draft petition for the writ of certiorari there. That's already been sent to the printer. We plan on filing it on October 16th. And basically what we are asking the Supreme Court to do is to take a look at the statute that he was charged under, which is the abuse of tax shelter statute. What Congress did is every time they pass a law, somebody tries to figure out a loophole, and they will market what they produce to people saying, hey, do this, then you're able to take advantage of these deductions or this kind of write-off, and that'll lower your taxes. Well, some of these plans were bogus, and so Congress passed an abuse of tax shelter law, and there's several elements that have to be proven for the government to prevail in an abuse of tax shelter case. Here they use that law against Benson, saying that what he's doing, what should be protected under the First Amendment, is actually an abuse of tax shelter.
And what I'm going to read it right. I actually have the appeals court ruling here, and it's I can't see which page it is just yet, but it says violation of a statutory authority for the injunction. This is what it says: violation of 26 USC 6700, and it talks about, as you said, some kind of plan or some kind of product or something. And I think, just as I was reading it, if you go to the third paragraph, it says which the person knows or has reason to know is false or fraudulent. Now, I think that, I thought that was, as we're reading Mr. Benson's information, it seems to me very clear that Mr. Benson believes it to be true. So I don't know where they could, and as I saw the order for the injunction, the language went way beyond what is here in paragraph number three. It went way beyond saying, oh, he believes it to be false or fraudulent. I think the court admitted that he believed it to be true. Did it not?
What the court said, in essence, was that it's objectively unreasonable for him to believe what he's saying is true because the courts have said it's not true, when in fact what the courts have said is we can't look at it.
Right. And since we've said...
this has been to court before, albeit not on the issue that Mr. Benson is presenting, intentional amendment. In fact, this is the first time that, as far as I know in the history of the United States, the issue of an intentional amendment of the language of a proposed constitutional amendment has come before a court. And so there can't be any prior case law on it because the issue has never been raised before.
And the Supreme Court hasn't weighed in on it yet.
Right.
So, and that's, I think that is, I think that now the problem is we know, and most people, many people don't know this. If you file what they filed in or what they plan on filing in the U.S. Supreme Court, they don't just automatically take it. It's not an appeal of right. It's, this is a little, kind of a quasi, you know, administrative law, acting like common law sort of injunction kind of thing, that they don't really have a right to have the U.S. Supreme Court review. Now, I guess you're going to put a lot of marketing in there to try to bait the Supreme Court to say, hey, this is going to come up again because it hadn't been settled. I'm presuming you've got something like that in there?
Well, yeah, and in addition, I'm representing some people in the federal district court in Florida who have been charged with felonies because they put together seminars where people went and spoke about these types of issues. And actually, Bill Benson went and spoke at one of these seminars. So they've all been charged with felonies. Mr. Benson's case is a civil injunction case, but we have a corresponding criminal case now. And I raised the 16th Amendment issue in that case, too. And just as in Benson, the district court refused to look at it. But I've mentioned that in the Supreme Court case. And without getting real technical, as soon as we file the petition with the Supreme Court, I'm going to file a petition with the 11th Circuit in Florida to have them force the judge to answer the questions that we've raised. And I presume that the Court of Appeals will deny that, and then I'll be taking that up to the Supreme Court. So we'll have two separate cases on the same issue. I've carefully orchestrated this timing.
Well, I think as I'm – now, this seems kind of strange, and a lot of people go, what is David Allen Carmichael talking about? Is he a tax protester? You know what I talked about yesterday? I talked about by what authority, and this is for you, Jeff. I reviewed, I said, why are we talking about whether something's right or wrong unless we step back and say first, do they have any authority to do it? If they don't have any authority to do it, it shouldn't be coming up for discussion. And that's essentially the history of judicial restraint, is it not? If they don't have authority, why should we pollute the discussion when we shouldn't have the discussion? And so essentially, you're really going to the point of, if somebody in their good conscience does not see that the government has a particular authority to do a particular thing, how can they in good conscience participate in it? And then if that's what they think, how can a court exclude that as a discussion point when they raise it as a defense? I think that's pretty important. And I think
issues were taken up to the Supreme Court, and I can read it from the brief. It's the second question presented, is whether the due process clause of the Fifth Amendment is violated when a district court finds it lacks jurisdiction to hear and consider a defense to two elements of a cause of action under IRC 6700, but does have jurisdiction to find in favor of the government on those two elements. In other words, what they're saying is, well, you can't defend yourself because we don't have any jurisdiction to hear your defense, but we do have jurisdiction to find you guilty.
On the same provision of law that would put them in the discussion in the court in the first place.
Right.
And that's in Florida.
I mean, the government has to prove, number one, that his statement was false.
Right.
So the burden shifted to them to prove it was false. the burden didn't shift to Benson to prove it was true until they proved it was false, and they didn't do that. They said, Judge, this is false because that's the way we want it, and we don't want you to hear the evidence that we're wrong.
And were these guys already convicted in a district court, or is this something that is still in the works? Is this trial ongoing, and are you facing appeal? What's the stage here?
Oh, you're talking about the
Florida cases.
Case in Florida?
Yeah.
They've been charged with several felonies. We're still at pretrial. It hasn't been set for trial yet.
Okay, and I got to do a little caveat here. I'm using these Latin terms because we're talking to a lawyer. I'm David Allen Carmichael. This is the Faith and Freedom Show. I'm going to deal with these issues on a constitutional basis, a biblical basis, and the basis of right versus wrong. And so this is one of these troubling hot potatoes. And I would say that folks who have a passion toward making sure that the provisions of the IRS and all that stuff are basically carried out to the nth degree, they'll be hostile necessarily to where I'm saying. I think Christians who want folks to obey every ordinance of man will get hostile. And then there's people who are passionately against the IRS and all those things and say, David's too nice of a guy, and they're going to be hostile. This is a hot potato. And I think it's important because, you know what? In all of these cases, I think it's so important, Jeff, is that everybody, no matter at what level, that they actually do the process of law instead of allowing their preconceived notions to warp their behavior. And I think I think that's often what we see in courtrooms. And I tell people that listen to our show sometimes that really what judicial restraint is, it's there so that a guy who is evil and depraved, wicked and degenerate, as John Locke would say, wouldn't allow his depravity to intrude upon justice. But if he will follow the rules, then justice will more likely occur. So what it seems to be with this argument, as I've just been reviewing it today, it really does come down to this issue of, if somebody raises a particular defense, you can't just say, too bad, so sad, I can't entertain that thought. They really have to go down into it, look at the rules, make a determination. And I guess one court did make a determination that the secretary, the solicitor general, whoever it was, at one point made a decision. I could see at the appeals court level, they say, well, we're going to just go with that. But they can't. But as the point that you're making in this case is, you can't tell the guy that he suddenly becomes a fraud because they disagree with him. And essentially, that's really what this comes down to.
Two separate issues there. First of all, the courts that have looked at it have not looked at the argument that states intentionally amended the language. That issue has never been taken up with respect to the 16th Amendment or any other constitutional amendment. It's a question of first impression.
Okay, so this is the first time it's going to be looked at. Now, whether or not this is a case, and I'm sure you've tried to do this, that is framed in such a way that the Supreme Court feels like they can take it on in a particular way, and I hope you can stick with us one more session, because what I'd like to do is come back to this discussion about commercial speech. And will your case be kind of, is it possible that the courts could take it off on basically a separate trail, deal with the commercial speech issue? And I think they're going to have a problem depending on how you frame your argument. I haven't read your brief yet. But with regard to, I think if they stayed to the narrow statute that they claim that they're resting upon, I think that itself would be obviously something that needs to be brought up. But there is an issue of this commercial speech and what constitutes that. But we're going to take a break right now. And, folks, our number here is 888-850-1872, 888-850-1872. And I think there's going to be a lot of people who have some questions about this. And if your brain's a little tired, you want to just rest back, sit back, and go for the ride, then we'll give you that, too. We're going to be back in a minute here on the Faith and Freedom Show. Check us out online at faithfreedoms.org.